This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
You're listening to Radio Hawke's Bay. This is a program called Community Corner. My name is Ken Morrison, and today it's our pleasure to be talking to Kat Levine and Troy Elliott, who are currently touring New Zealand to chat to school children about mental well-being. Welcome to Community Corner.
Kia ora. Thanks for having us.
Kia ora.
My very great pleasure to have you here. Kat, let's start with you. What made you want to be involved in mental well-being education?
Well, my story starts from when I was a little girl growing up on a farm in the Waikato and really struggling with big feelings from that young age as a five-year-old, and what I later found out was depression, and having negative thoughts, or what we call stinking thinking, that, oh, no one likes me, no one's my friend, or there's something wrong with me, and having those through all my primary school years, teenage years and adulthood, how that affected me and the choices that I made. And so it wasn't until the age of 30 that I was diagnosed with depression. Mm. And I received some help from a counsellor talking about the stinking thinking and all these beliefs that we have about ourselves and how we view the world and how they aren't true and how we need to catch that negative thinking or that stinking thinking, check if it's true and change it to cool cat thinking, which is what we're teaching in schools. So it's really a foundational part of having positive mental well-being for life when we can learn these at a young age. So for my journey of thinking, if only I'd known this as a child, and also my daughter, she's 21 now, and she's really struggled with anxiety in primary and high school, and it affected her self-harm and all sorts of things. And again, I think if she'd known these things, and if I'd known as a parent from a young age, what a difference that would have made. So really passionate about every child receiving that knowledge at a young age.
How prevalent is poor mental health among Tamariki? Because I was just driving along the other day with my wife and I said, oh, look at those kids, they're not a worry in the world. But obviously that's not the case.
Yeah, it's not the case. What we see is kids seem to be enjoying themselves, you know, jumping around on the playground, but the struggles that they have that we don't see. So some of the statistics in New Zealand here is that 1 in 4 young people will have a struggle with mental health before the age of 18. So you think that's a quarter of our young people, and that mental health challenges, 50% of them start before the age of 12, and that 14 young people are admitted to hospital every day or week for self-harm. And that's not counting, like my daughter, the 500 cuts she's got on herself that she wasn't hospitalised, or the ones that just get sent home. So there is this deep pain that some of them are carrying, and that can be trauma from what's going on in the world. And right here we can look at Cyclone Gabrielle, and these kids are still suffering. And when there's some heavy rain, they are really, really distressed, and they don't have the skills to deal with that. We've got COVID, and how did that affect the children? Because they're picking up from the adults around them. There's something dangerous out there, and people are unsafe, or stay close, and that's programming them. And even in utero, it does affect babies if the mother's under stress. So they are coming into schools with a whole lot more worries and concerns than 50 years ago, for sure.
I think to add to it, you know, the really sad position is we actually still have one of the highest youth suicide rates in the world. And, you know, that's after, you know, a huge investment of $3 billion from the last government and also this government having the first mental health minister. So I think it's one of these things we really need to try and address. We don't want to be the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff.
No.
We don't want to be the ambulance at the top. We just don't want an ambulance there at all.
Of course. I wonder, though, those two things that you mentioned, COVID and Cyclone Gabrielle, they're supposedly a 1 in 100 year occurrence, and still 25% of our children are suffering with poor mental health. What are you putting it down to?
I think there's so many different factors. It's hard to pinpoint one thing. For me, one of the things I believe in, and some research shows, is how our families are. We're not as community and connected as we were, so that, you know, saying of a it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. And so you think about, you know, a lot of mothers may struggle with ill, mental health or depression after they have their baby. When you're in marae or an Asian culture and your family's surrounding you, they're providing support. But when the mother is there on their own and having to care for the baby and for themselves, and they're isolated or family are distant or grandparents are still working or too busy, they're not having that support in those really challenging early years. And that research is showing those early years for the children, how important that feeling of safety is for them to have that really good foundation going forward. Then we'll pick another one that's a favourite of a lot of people is social media. It used to be you'd go to the playground, someone would call your name, you'd come home and you'd be safe. But now it's there 24/7 and it's coming in their inboxes. And my daughter, she had to get an iPad, I guess she was about 8, and the school said it was compulsory. Worst thing ever. Her friends were contacting her, and not friends were contacting her, and even her use of a device, it's not just homework and put away, that I wouldn't have allowed her as a parent. So there's all these factors. There's sleep is a really big factor in anxiety if they're not getting enough sleep. If the parents are struggling with their mental health, so some is hereditary, but also some is if a parent has anxiety, the children, they do pick up on that. Nutrition, so many factors there for anxiety.
Actually, just to jump in where Kat was talking about the family as well, if we think about the prevalence now of, you know, a two-income family, it's needed so much now. My wife and I, you know, we have a number of different roles we do. You know, our three-year-old was in daycare from the age of about, you know, 4 or 5 months, and that is more and more common in this day and age. So the old nuclear family we used to have is really a thing of the past so much now, and I think, therefore, it is actually affecting the well-being of our young tamariki for sure.
I have no doubt you've hit the nail on the head there, but there is no other option for 90% of families. You've got to have two people working just so you can survive. I mean, people are just existing now, aren't they?
And I think that that's exactly the point that you raised there, is it's existing. And I think that adds extra stress onto the family and the kids. You know, they're seeing mum and dad that are stressed. They're stressed with the cost of living. They're stressed with the hours they're working. And, you know, little Johnny or Julie are sitting there in this situation where they're thinking they're bringing the stress onto mum and dad. So that's creating extra anxiety for themselves. And their inner critic is saying, it must be me. Dad's so upset. It must be my fault. And it's not. And that's not fair on putting that onto our children. So the programs that CAD has developed is really to teach the kids about their feelings and about their well-being, which actually makes it a lot easier for them to be able to emotionally regulate themselves.
Yeah. All right, so let's just move on to what you are doing to help. So you're visiting all the schools throughout New Zealand at the moment. Talk us through what happens. So you turn up at a school. You've just come from a school, in fact. Tell us what happened when you turned up at that school.
So, yeah, we've visited 20 schools in the Hawke's Bay here over the last 2 weeks. And so we're doing a show about anxiety. And so we turn up, Willie and I and Troy, we set up all the stage and the tamariki come in and we do a performance with them. And it starts off telling a story about a little girl. So Willie gets to dress in a tutu and the tamariki love that. It's hilarious. With his flower crown, and I tell a story of a little girl with her My Little Pony backpack, how she goes to school and she has these big worries. What if I don't make any friends? What if everyone laughs at me? And what if something terrible happens? And I pause the story there and say, this is a true story. It's actually about my daughter and how she carried those big worries through high school, how she didn't have fun, she couldn't make friends, she didn't want to do all the things that the other kids were doing because her worries were getting in the way, but she also kept it a secret from me and she didn't share her feelings with me, so I couldn't help her. So then we introduce the neuroscience of our brain. So part of our brain and our feelings brain is your amygdala, and that you'll all know, fight, flight and freeze. And that's the part that warns you that you're in danger. And so we call that our worry watchdog and our angry dragon. So our worry watchdog is flight and fight is the angry dragon. So Willie gets behind, we get a teacher, usually finding a male teacher, put him in the tutu and with the little pink wig and get him sitting up on stage, and Willie will come up with the puppets of Worry Watchdog, who's telling her all this stinking thinking of no one's your friend and, you know, it's all going to be terrible and just stay home and don't go to school. And we say to the tamariki, you know, when your worry watchdog's in charge, like it was for my daughter, it was telling her she was in danger all the time. And she kept it a secret, so I couldn't help her with it. And then the angry dragon comes out, and again, another puppet, and we say, what happens when your angry dragon's in charge? You get in trouble. You do things that later on you wish you hadn't done, and you miss out on fun things. So our angry dragon protects us and keeps us safe. You know, stop it, I don't like it. Don't be mean to my friend. But if it takes over, it is in charge, that's when we get in trouble and yeah, doesn't work out well. So we've got the angry dragon coming out next.
Yep.
And then we say, you know, ka kite to both of them, and we bring out cool cat, which is your prefrontal cortex. I don't use those words, of course, for the tamariki. Yeah. And cool cat is there to help calm down angry dragon, help worry watchdog be brave, and help us, you know, have positive thoughts and make good choices. So Willie will come out with cool cat, who is very cool, and then we teach the tamariki those steps from cool cat. So this is all evidence-based and science-based. So our first step is about noticing what you're feeling in your body and naming it. So they each get one of these cubes here. It's a cardboard box that you can hold in your hand with a whole bunch of emojis on it. So the children can look at that after a hard day of school or after lunch. How am I feeling this morning or this afternoon? I'm feeling pretty mad. Then they go down the side and think, actually, what's the feeling underneath that? Maybe I'm annoyed. Sometimes it's actually fear, or you're overwhelmed, or maybe you've got some sad feelings that you're lonely or whakamā embarrassed. And then we say the most important thing is don't keep your feelings a secret, and to share that with an adult and ask them how they're feeling every day. So that's our first step. Then we go into the deep breathing, which is so important for emotional regulation. And we've got a great song that Willie's recorded for us, Haki Roto, Haki Waho, and talking about, you know, calming our body and our brain. And then the third step, and this one is the one that I'm most passionate about because I think often it can be missing, is catching that stinking thinking and checking if it's true and changing it to cool cat thinking. Now, often with emotional regulation and programs, they may, you know, Johnny runs out and, you know, he has a rage out in the field, and we can calm him down and get him to calm down and whatever, but we're not addressing what's that underlying thought or belief that he has. Everyone's against me. Life's not fair. So those core beliefs that influence us for life, like I had, they're formed before the age of 8. And so when we're teaching the children, that's not actually true, and that's your angry dragon or your worry watchdog telling you those things, but you need to catch that stinking thinking, check if it's true, kind and helpful. And then we get Willie at the back of the audience, and he's got a microphone there and these big streamers with cool cat thoughts on them, and we get a teacher up on stage catching that. So some of the things they'll say is, I can be a good friend, or today's a great day, or, you know, I can try hard, try my best, that's what matters. So throwing those, getting the kids to repeat it and saying, this is something that as adults we need to do as well to make our cool cat loud and in charge, and get them repeating that on a daily basis.
Yeah. I wonder, hindsight being 2020 and knowing what you know now, but if you wind the clock back to when you were a young mother and your 5-year-old daughter had this problem and she didn't tell you, what would you have done if she had said these things to you? Because most people don't have your skills.
Mm.
You know, parents have got no idea. They think, oh, well, geez, you're getting bullied at school. What am I going to do about it?
Mm.
And most kids don't want their parents getting involved. So how do you sort that out?
I think the first thing that I see there is no one told me about anxiety. I knew enough about depression, but I'd never heard of this thing called anxiety, and that's back in 2020. So all the sore tummies, and I don't want to do this, and I don't want to go there, I didn't get it. I thought she was being naughty.
Mm.
And so when she was going and seeing counsellors, I thought, well, why didn't anyone say, there's this thing called anxiety, read this book?
Mm.
And I could understand why she had those fears, and I could understand how to help her. So the first thing is when we get them talking about how they're feeling, and naming those feelings with our mood cube or our mood map we've got online to download, is when they talk about how they're feeling, that actually emotionally regulates them. They start feeling safe. And even when I name it and I can go, oh, Troy, you seem to be really frustrated.
I'm not quite sure what you're going on about there, Kat, but I'll take that aboard, yeah.
It calms me down.
Yes.
And it calms him down. Absolutely. Just by naming it. So that's that first thing, is opening that up, not feeling like I have to go, well, what happened and was it your fault and you should do this. Just, you think if you came home from work and you had a rubbish day and you go home and you say to your partner, my terrible day, and they go, well, what happened and, well, you should have done this and maybe it's your fault, or you can talk to them tomorrow. We don't want solutions. By being heard, maybe pass a glass of wine, we can calm down. So when we can allow that space for our children without feeling like we have to fix it, but also our anxiety levels. There's a saying with regulation, so that's being able to manage our emotions. If you're dysregulated as an adult, you can't regulate a dysregulated child. So you need to find your calm first. And knowing there's this thing in counselling, what they do is they look at, if you say, if my daughter said, oh, I don't want to do cross country today, and if I allowed, you know, she's so much fear, if I said, oh, okay, that's fine, darling, so her fear's gone up and then it was alleviated by not doing it, so she's like, oh, that's safe. Next time her fear's even higher and it's actually not dropping down, it's as much. So when you think about someone, what's it, not agoraphobia, what's the other one? No, it's agoraphobia when you're... That's often, not always, building up over time. It's the mall's not safe, the road's not safe, the front yard's not safe, and it narrows their world down. And when they have that, they don't join in, you know, don't go to the cross country, they don't go to friends' parties, they don't go to this. And so all the positive experiences of friendships, of resilience, of winning, of losing, interacting with others, of physical exercise, they're missing so much. Because you're trying to protect them as a mother the best way you know how. And so understanding her dysregulation, why she wanted to be close to me and what I could do in that.
I wonder if it is part of the problem that we don't sort of get together as families anymore. I mean, I'm not quite sure what you did. You're a generation much younger than me. And we used to sit around the table to have our tea. And we would have a bit of a chinwag. You know, how was your day sort of business when I was with my parents? But we don't do that now. You know.
Yeah. Oh, it's really interesting. I've got, I may not look it, and thank goodness this is radio and not TV. I'm a 57-year-old with a 35-year-old wife.
Yeah.
But I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And it's really important we sit down and have Kai together and have a discussion. Yeah. Our 11-year-old's on the spectrum, and, you know, it's really important also that we, as Kat said, that whole line of actually, you know, he didn't want to get a bus to intermediate school. He didn't want to try that. And so Dad hopped on the bus for the first 3 or 4 times with him until it was, don't hop on the bus with me. I know how to do this myself. Yes. And I think that's that scenario, teach and learn and let them actually become, you know, young adults and actually understand some skills. Mm. And that's the one thing that I think is really critical. We have to give them the skills, and we don't, unfortunately. You're bang on, it's time poor. Yeah. And if we allow kids to sit on their iPad while they're eating their Kai, we're actually not doing our children a service.
No. Well, the research shows that when we protect our child from harm, you know, wrap them in cotton wool, and then we've got a child who's exposed to a lot of trauma and chaos, but the one who's been wrapped in cotton wool, their resilience and their ability to handle what's comes at them, it's actually affected them negatively, and they have more of that cortisol stress hormone. But there's a technique in counselling, and so when I do training for teachers, I teach them this, is, say for my daughter, standing up in front of everyone and reading a poem, she was sobbing, she was shaking, didn't want to go to school. So when we use this ladder approach, we break it down, and her teacher helped her do that. So the first thing that she did is she stood just with him at the desk on her own and said it. And then she had some friends sit down, and just 3 of them, and she did it. And so when we can break down things into those little bits, it's not this huge leap, but a little bit growing them stronger and stronger in their confidence. And that can be for a school camp or a sleepover. Mm-hmm. We go and visit the camp, or you stay for a couple of hours and then come home.
I suppose it is very easy, though, for children to slip through the cracks, isn't it? Because when I went to school, there was 42 kids in my class. And, you know, the teacher's not looking at it. Any of us individually, is that still the case? I mean, how do teachers recognise these problems?
Well, that's the challenge for teachers, is not only do you have a huge number of neurodiverse tamariki who are needing extra care, and their ability to regulate can be that of a 2-year-old, but they're put in with the 8-year-olds, and their trigger for when something doesn't go their way, and whether that's their... whatever is happening in their brain and their formation, whether it's neurodiversity or some trauma, they've got their hands full. But what they will see is these ones lose their cool. They'll see these ones are so anxious and not wanting to come and do this or do that. But there's actually another category that often gets mixed. So when we look at the fight, flight, freeze, there's a fourth one that's not often talked about, and that's fawn. And these are the ones who are the people pleasers. So they are terrified inside, and they think, to stay safe, I need to keep everyone happy. So they're trying to keep the peace, keep the teacher happy, but inside they're like, I call it like your fluffy duck. You know, they're paddling furiously underneath. And so for teachers to understand what are the things you can look for. With one of my daughters, went through kind of an ugly marriage separation, and you know, there's a bit of DV in there, and so she was quite traumatised. So we moved to Tauranga from Auckland, and she would sit in class and rub her finger on the carpet till it was raw. So there are things that they may be doing that are showing something's not okay, and when the teachers can spot them. But I think for the teachers to have the skills and the strategies, because they're taught so much at college about maths and different curriculum things, but they're not always given the skills to understand the emotional needs and how to regulate that. So a big part, yes, we go in and we do the show for the tamariki. They learn some skills, the teachers do. But when we give teachers the training and the understanding, so talking to a kids about your amygdala and your fight and flight or cognitive distortions isn't going to hit it. No. But when you can say, that's what's your angry dragon saying now? What would Cool Cat say? And with our work up north, we were seeing five-year-olds getting the puppets out and talking to each other after lunchtime. So they're having an understanding, they're coaching each other. But the teachers are having a great understanding, rather than that's the naughty one who's always losing his cool. That's the angry dragon. They have a smaller window of tolerance, or they get triggered more easily because of what's happening at home.
Yes.
So,
And the teachers are really after these tools. My wife is a primary school teacher, so I know how overworked our teachers are. And, you know, they've got new curriculum coming through the whole time. They've got new changes, having to learn and go through. They're time poor. And so often that child or that tamariki that's sitting in the corner, that is, they recognize that they can actually optically see that child has a challenge, but they haven't been given the tools to be able to support that. So any tools we can give actually aids their ability to also look after the other tamariki in the class as well. So they don't have to focus on one at any one time.
I think that's the real passion of mine, and a phrase that came when I started this program is out of the counselling rooms into the classroom. So it's not just, you know, ambulance at the bottom where the kids who have self-harmed or whatever get the help, but every child in this country are given an understanding of these strategies and of their brain and how they can emotionally regulate, so they can go forward with that. And when it's a classroom program rather than just one child who's pulled out to have this extra work, that's meaning that the teachers can use that language throughout the year. You know, let's have our Cool Cat thinking, or everyone, let's do our breathing, or using the characters in their art or their writing. So they've got a framework that they can use to teach that, and going right through the schools, tying in with their school values. But it's providing the teachers with that as well.
Rather than isolation. That's the important thing, that it's actually becomes almost part of that curriculum. I know it's a terrible thing to say that it's outside of curriculum, but it needs to be thought of it as well.
We're just about out of time, but I just want to – it's not a thing that's only going to have to work in schools, but it has to work in the home as well. So how do you get it into the home?
That is something that we are also very passionate about, but it is challenging. And so the conversations we have with schools, you know, we're already seeing – the kids are going home with these resources like these cubes. They're going home with the art. They're singing the songs. They're talking about the shows. They can watch the videos at home, and – parents are learning about that. So they're like, oh, you know, Tama came home and was doing this deep breathing. What's that about? Or he had that. Or they said it's their worry watchdog. Or they're bringing these strategies into home. Schools are really great at making that effort to connect with the parents. This is what they've been learning this week. Here's the video. Ask them these questions. But we're in the process of developing books that go home, because if a book goes into the home, they're reading it, they're repeating it, and the parents will have that knowledge and that understanding, and even the discussion questions at the back. And some schools will put on events for parents after drop-off or in the evening if your child's struggling with anxiety or you're wanting some help with this. And because we're quite entertaining in what we do. Yes, we use props, we use people up on stage, and we have really sticky knowledge that they can go home and use straight away. And you're learning for yourself as well.
And imagine the beautiful world when our kids are coming home and teaching us.
Yeah, how good would
that
be?
Is one of the things that we really need to look at.
I wonder, when you reflect on your career to date, Kat, you've been doing it for more than 20 years. Is there a standout moment which says, wow, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
Well, yes, I've been working in mental well-being and with kids for over 20 years, but this particular program, sort of, we started dabbling in it in 2020, but when we got some amazing funding from Rotary for Northland for 67 schools for a year-long program. So Willie and I spent 3 years up there and seeing the amazing results. So for me, maybe in 2020, I was doing a school tour and started in Bluff and got as far as New Plymouth before COVID cut that short. And that's, for those of you who don't know, I have pink hair. And I decided for that month I would have pink hair when I went into the schools so that I'd be a bit more memorable. But when teachers and principals are saying to me, every child in the country needs this, and then they say, I needed this. And I thought, well, hang on. Why isn't this? What's different about what I'm doing? We know all these other organisations and who we work closely with now, but there was somehow a niche of something that's fun, that's got characters, New Zealand made, and having the performances, the shows, they are not cheap to put on. It's much easier to send out some digital resources, but that's what's having the impact and the teachers following through. So those comments, that's what, you know, I was only supposed to do it for a month and then go back to a normal job, but I just said I have to keep doing this. And so for a year, I did it for a koha and before Rotary came through. So we're at that stage now that Rotary project and that funding has come to an end. And so we're very passionate about the Hawke's Bay because my dad came down for 3 months and did some work on his excavator in Tutira and a couple of his mates. He lent them bulldozers and things in town here. So Cyclone Gabriel and meeting with Tutira School where he was based and the need for it. It's more here than anywhere else I've been in the country, and the welcome we've received. And Troy, we've got so many schools calling us. We've seen 20 schools.
Yeah, unfortunately the desire and the need out there is great. So we need to keep pushing for it, that's for sure.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Look, guys, it's been a pleasure having a chat with you on this Community Corner. Wish you well for the future. Look forward to talking to you again in the very near future.
Thank you. We would love to be back.
Kia tau tō hine ngaro Hā ki roto Hā ki waho Kia pai, kia tau, kia maia Kia pai, kia tau, kia maia Breathe in, breathe out, calm your body Breathe in, breathe out, calm your brain Be cool, be brave, be calm Be cool, be brave, be calm Hā ki roto, hā ki waho 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 Breathe in, breathe out.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.